Little Sleepies makes getting your kids dressed a lot easier. Their signature bamboo fabric is incredibly soft, breathable, and gentle on sensitive skin. It stretches so kids can move comfortably all day, from playtime to bedtime. Parents love the smart details too, like double zippers and fold-over mittens that make diaper changes and getting dressed faster and easier. And because Little Sleepies are designed to grow with your child, they last longer than typical kids' clothes. Right now, discover the ultra-soft styles families swear by. Visit littlesleepies.com and find your new favorite pajamas today.
I'm so happy to have you here to break down the importance of the Electoral College. We always hear that number, 270 is what it takes. What does that actually mean?
On January 6th, all the votes from all the various states would be opened and counted, 270 electoral votes, which is the amount you need to become president.
Can you elaborate, though, what a swing state is?
That's why you see candidates spending over 90% of campaign funds in swing states.
Why doesn't just one vote per person count like the popular vote?
What a lot of people don't know, that it is possible for both candidates to get 269 electoral votes. And if it were a tie, it would trigger what they call...
Today on Misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel, we're diving into one of the most complex and often misunderstood elements of our democratic system, the U.S. Electoral College. Joining me today is the award-winning filmmaker Maximina Jusson. She is a visionary storyteller. Her debut feature, One Person, One Vote, uncovers the history and intricate layers of the Electoral College, a subject she knows intimately and has explored deeply. Maximina's work has not only won acclaim, premiering at the 2024 Pan-African Film Festival, but has also sparked conversation on overlooked societal complexities. Today, she's here to help us unravel the misconceptions surrounding the Electoral College and why it's more than just a footnote in our voting process. Get ready for an enlightening discussion with Maximina Jusson. Maximina, thank you so much for joining us today on Misunderstood. I'm so happy to have you here to break down the importance of the Electoral College and what it means, because up until now, I feel like, and we spoke about this, people's eyes just glaze over when you talk about that subject. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me here today, Rachel. I love Misunderstood. I can totally relate to that. So really excited to be here. I made this film because most Americans, the vast majority of Americans, no matter what level of education you're at, don't understand the Electoral College, nor do they know why we have it in the first place. And, right. You know, like you said, people hear the words Electoral College and their eyes, you know, basically glaze over. But the story is actually, you know, a lot more dramatic than, than what people would think. And so I knew that making this film, you know, there'd be a lot of story to tell that would keep people captivated.
Right. So let's go back for a minute and explain the history of how this government, you know, how this country came up with government and decided how people were being elected. Can you give us a little brief synopsis on what happened and how this came to pass?
Yeah, well, you know, the Electoral College came to be when the framers were writing the Constitution. So it is a clause, Article 2, Section 1, that is written into the Constitution. And at the time, there were 13 states and about 3 million people in the United States, 700,000 of which were enslaved and mostly living in the slaveholding states, which was North and South Carolina, Georgia, Virginia, and Maryland. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when these states came together to write the Constitution, the slaveholding states, you know, were really concerned that one, slavery might be taken away from them. And two, if a large portion of their population was enslaved and couldn't vote, then that they would have very little influence in a centralized government. You know, this Constitution basically would create the laws that would govern all 13 states. And so, right. You know, an indirect method of voting was presented, and which meant that what that mean is that you could count your enslaved people for purposes of representation in Congress and ultimately votes in the Electoral College without giving them the right to vote, right? Or
right. What I found what was interesting by watching your documentary, something I'd never heard of called the three-fifths compromise. Can you explain that? It basically said that slaves counted as three people to every tribe.
Yeah. So basically, you know, the slaveholding states wanted to count 100% of their enslaved population for more seats in Congress and ultimately votes in the Electoral College. And the states where slavery was being phased out or abolished were like, listen, like if you want to count them, then you need to make them citizens. But, you know, obviously that's not something that they wanted to do. And there was a huge disagreement, you know, around this. And so instead of basically counting all of their enslaved people for more, you know, seats in Congress, they agreed to only count three out of every five. So three-fifths of that entire population. And that's written into the Constitution. And so that was the compromise. But, you know, it created an indirect method of voting where they could get, you know, the more enslaved people you had, you know, in your state, basically the more seats in Congress you had and votes in the Electoral College. And that to me was pretty shocking, you know, information.
Right. Right. So here's the thing. Here we're rounding out the last 30 days, basically, before our election. Yeah. There's been so much talked about, you know, whether or not it's done fairly, how it's done, if it's done, you know, legally, too. Can you just break down in the easiest way possible to explain what the Electoral College is versus, or the electoral vote, I guess, versus the popular vote? Because I think that's where people don't understand and get wonky.
So what people don't understand really is that you're not directly voting for the president. You're voting for a slate of electors in your state that are pledged to that candidate. So basically if your state has nine electors, for example, that means you have nine electors for every single party that is on the ballot. So if, say, for example, you're in Colorado and you have a Republican and a Democrat and a Green Party, you know, candidate on your ballot, then you're going to have a slate of electors for each and every one of those candidates, right?
Right.
And so you're voting for that slate, not the direct. And so the slate basically is pledged to vote for the popular vote winner in the state, but not in the whole country.
Okay. That, wait, let's not get ahead of ourselves. So each state has a number assigned to it of the value of your electors. Is that what they're called?
Yeah.
Electors who then vote one way or the other based on the popular vote from every vote in that state, correct?
Right. So basically, you know, every state has a set, you know, amount of electors depending on your two senators and the number of people you have in the House. So it's the total number of seats you have in Congress is the same amount of presidential electors you have. And so depending who wins in your state, you know, that slate that's pledged to that particular candidate is who will end up voting in the Electoral College.
Right. So I think this is where people get confused. Like when Hillary Clinton and Trump were against each other and they said that Hillary won the popular vote, why wouldn't she win? So now from what you've described, obviously the way that we elect our, you know, the person at the top of the ticket is based on this way, the Electoral College. But why? Why doesn't just one vote per person count like the popular vote? Why wouldn't we do it that way?
Well, it's because, you know, it's written into the Constitution, right? And so, you know, that's how it's written, and it's going to be that way unless an amendment is written to say we want to abolish it. But right now, that's Article 2, Section 1. The states basically have the power to decide how they allocate electors. Right now, 48 out of 50 states say that whoever, you know, wins the popular vote in that state gets all of those electors, right? Mm-hmm. So that means anyone who voted for the minority candidate in that state, all of those votes get erased. And so that's how you can get to a point where you can have, you know, the runner-up candidate ascend to the presidency because of this winner-take-all method plays a big role in creating inconsistencies between the national popular vote and the Electoral College vote.
Right. So in doing all your research for this
documentary, did you come to think that this was the right way, that this is how it should be, or should we be trying to change these rules?
Well, my goal as a filmmaker is to be a fly on the wall of history. So it's my job to basically bring, you know, bring to the people, right, the history, which we don't know how we got the Electoral College in the first place. Mm-hmm. And we don't know the mechanisms and the, you know, and the finer nuances as far as how it works. And so I think we can't really decide as a people, you know, what the future of this should be until we have this baseline information. So my role as that fly on the wall of history to kind of take you through the whole timeline of the Electoral College from the beginning to today, and also, you know, show all perspectives. So it's not just one-sided, you know. So
right.
I include a feature people in my documentary who are on both sides of the argument, because I feel like we as a people have the intelligence to like take a look at, you know, this history and how it works and say, hey, this is what I want to do. And so right. I'm not here to tell you, hit you over the head with like what, you know, what you should think, but I'm here to provide that information so that you can make a decision as to how you'd like to mobilize. You know, I do have a point of view, just in terms of here's the education and here's the timeline and sure. here are all the perspectives. And so that to me is my job in this. But
right.
I think that when you look at the story from beginning to end, you know, there's a lot of issues in there. And so it's, you know, for me, I just wanted to highlight, you know, all of those variables.
So it was interesting watching it though, because, you know, every election season, it's all about getting to the bottom of how are you going to vote? You must vote. You must register to vote. Does your vote count? Is it illegal? The thing is that it almost seems like that's one part of the question, but then there are so many people that I don't think vote because they feel like their state already
right.
goes to the other candidate or to the candidate that they're part of automatically. So what is the purpose of voting?
Right.
So as I'm watching your show, I'm like, listen, I'm from New York City.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where I was living the last couple decades of my life. That always would go Democratic. I wouldn't feel like I needed to have to vote if I knew that that Democrat was at the top of the ticket, gonna win. But in a year like this, if I was living in New York and I wanted to vote for Kamala and I wanted her to win, I would feel more urgency to go because who knows what could happen. But now I live in Florida. And if I decide to vote blue, I don't think it matters. So what's the point of me going and voting? So I think that's the dilemma a lot of people have.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, and that's very Electoral College driven, right? If you don't live in a swing state, if your state's either going to go red or blue, there's no real urgency to go to the polls. And I think that's why you have really low voter turnout in states that are not swing states, and a much higher voter turnout in states that are swing states. And what ends up happening is that if you don't show up to vote, then that means you're not voting for all the other things that are on the ballot as well.
And so
that's why, you know, even though you're not in a swing state, it is always important to vote. Because at the end of the day, you know, candidates craft and shape campaigns based on who shows up at the polls.
Right.
And so if you don't show up at the polls, then that means your demographic will be underrepresented and, you know, candidates will not prioritize the needs and wants of your demographic.
Right.
Additionally, there's all of these things down ballot, right, that really impact you, like your local, you know, elected representatives and your local ballot initiatives, and also other national, potentially national ballot initiatives that you don't get to vote on and you don't get a voice on. And especially those local initiatives and candidates, those are things that impact you most immediately because that's within your community. So if you're not up to speed on who those candidates are and what those bills are, then, you know, you're really doing a disservice to yourself and to your community. So it's always important to show up to the polls, not only for those down ballot initiatives, but also to show around the country that your demographic is the type of demographic that will show up to the polls.
Right.
So, right. You know, again, always important. And you never know when your state's going to be a swing state.
That's right. And let's talk about... Have you listened to the podcast Uncomfy, sticking with moments that challenge us? Real stories from guests who dared to get uncomfortable in a moment that challenged their worldview. In the thick of intense emotions, they chose to stay curious and open rather than lash out or shy away, and came out the other side with stronger relationships, clearer beliefs, and increased confidence. And you can do it too. Part real life stories, part conflict coaching, and self-improvement. So if you want to engage with others on important topics but aren't sure how, or are burnt out on social media and wish you could bring the humanity back into discussions online or real life, look no further. Learn how to improve your communication, disagree more productively, and be an inspired leader. In such a polarized world, learning how to stick with moments that challenge us without getting defensive or shutting down is a direct antidote for division. When you listen to this podcast, you will hear how others are healing their communities, families, and neighborhoods, learning to talk about what matters to them, working to view others as human so we can build a better world together. Each episode models the mental health principles of MBSR, that's mindfulness-based stress reduction, non-judging, patience, beginner's mind, trust, non-striving, acceptance, letting go. Recent stories include disrespected at the pool, she decided to confront the culprits, when one word threatened a work partnership, as a kid in Iran, she was taught to hate Jews, then she defended one in court. He thought his comment was harmless, then he got written up. If you're interested in any of this, take a listen to Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us, a podcast. This episode is brought to you by Holistic Goddess. Holistic Goddess has been such a trusted resource for me on my health journey. One product I really wanted to highlight is their Holistic Menopause Support by PhD Health. It's been a game changer for me during perimenopause, and here's why I love it. It eases discomfort. It really helps with hot flashes and mood swings. It boosts focus. The ingredients in it, including creatine, support mental sharpness. I feel more focused and clear-headed, which is so important for my busy days. It nurtures comfort. It gently addresses vaginal dryness with black cohosh. It's comforting to have that support during this time. It has natural ingredients. I love that it uses these ingredients like sage and rhubarb extract. If you're going through similar changes like perimenopause and menopause, I highly recommend giving this a try. It's been a relief for me, and I think it could help you too. Go to holisticgoddess.com and use code UNDERSTOOD for 15% off all orders. Again, that's holisticgoddess.com for 15% off using code UNDERSTOOD. Code UNDERSTOOD for 15% off all orders. Again, that's holisticgoddess.com for 15% off using code UNDERSTOOD.
Well, that's so interesting. Can we talk about swing states for
like
a second?
Georgia, for example, right?
Yeah. Right. Like, can you elaborate though what a swing state is for people listening that might not know, and how important, you know, what happens in these swing states? They're all talking about Pennsylvania and why Kamala should have maybe picked the person from there, because that would help with that state. So explain swing states to people.
So a swing state basically is a state where, you know, based on the polling and the results of the past few elections, the election could sway either way. California and New York right now are reliably blue. You know, Texas and Florida now. Florida used to be a swing state, but now Florida is seen as reliably red. Mm-hmm. And so whereas, you know, Georgia and Pennsylvania, it could swing either way because it's a very tight race in those states.
Right.
So it could be a difference of 10,000 votes, you know, as we saw in like Arizona, I believe, and and Georgia, that could basically swing the state, you know, in a different direction. And when it does swing in a different direction, that means that those electoral votes in that those states, in Pennsylvania, I think it's around 20, for example, could either go to one candidate or another, which could change completely change the outcome, right, of the election. So that's why you see candidates spending over 90% of campaign funds in swing states. And you can see what the candidates are doing now. They're only going to the swing states.
Right.
It's like California and Florida and every place else doesn't really exist.
Right. Okay. And then for a second, let's just break this down so I get it. Mm-hmm. We're talking about Georgia, let's say. How many electoral votes are coming from there? Do you remember the number?
Let me see. I don't have that. It's hard for me. Georgia electoral votes. I think they have around. I don't have it in front of me right now.
No, it's okay. So let's say
a little. They have something like a little less than 20.
Okay, fine. So, but what that means is depending on every single state, and I know because when I watch Fox or CNN or whoever it is that you're watching, all of a sudden the state will blow up. You'll look at all the different little areas and one little county might go blue, one county might go red, whatever those numbers are. And then whatever the popular vote is, let's say it goes red.
Yeah.
That gives the go ahead to those, say, 17 electors to 16, raise their hand. 16, okay.
In Georgia, yep.
In Georgia, to raise their hand and say, we now officially give the vote for Donald Trump. Is that how that works?
Right. So basically, if Donald Trump wins by one vote in Georgia, he'll get all 16 of Georgia's electoral votes.
Got it.
Now, if Kamala won by one vote in Georgia, then she would get all 16 of the electoral votes. And, you know, if it's that close in the electoral count, that could change the outcome, right? Just one state can basically change the outcome of the whole election, just like Florida did in 2000 with Gore and Bush, right? That one state of Florida changed the election.
But what's the, like, give me the details of this. Are these 16 people sitting around in a room waiting to call in their vote somewhere? Like, how does that work?
Little Sleepies makes getting your kids dressed a lot easier. Their signature bamboo fabric is incredibly soft, breathable, and gentle on sensitive skin. It stretches so kids can move comfortably all day, from playtime to bedtime. Parents love the smart details too, like double zippers and fold-over mittens that make diaper changes and getting dressed faster and easier. And because Little Sleepies are designed to grow with your child, they last longer than typical kids' clothes. Right now, discover the ultra-soft styles families swear by. Visit littlesleepies.com and find your new favorite pajamas today.
Yeah, so basically it's a slate of electors. So if Kamala were to win in Georgia, it would be one set of electors that represent the Democratic ticket. Mm-hmm. If Trump were to win, then it would be a Republican set of electors ready to vote for the Republican ticket. And so once
no, but I get that. But you know how we're all sitting there watching at night.
Yeah, it basically happens in the state legislature. So the electors will show up to the state legislature, and there'll be whatever it, you know, whatever the protocols are in that state. In my film, we follow Colorado. So basically, the electors went to the Colorado state capitol, and there they basically would sign, I think, like two or three copies of each. They'd cast their vote for president, and then they'd cast their vote for vice president. And then those votes would then get sent to the state capitol, to Congress, the U.S. Congress, where on January 6th, all the votes from all the various states would be opened and counted. And then until, you know, one candidate reaches 270, that's how they determine, they confirm that, okay, yes, such and such has won. They have reached the threshold of 270 electoral votes, which is the amount you need to become president.
Right. And just explain that a little more, because we always hear that number, 270 is what it takes. What does that actually mean?
So there's a total of 538 electors that are basically distributed to all of the states and D.C., And so, for example, California has 54 electoral votes. Georgia has 16. So all of those votes basically get, after they're cast by the electors sometime in December, they get sent to the Capitol, to U.S. Congress. And that's where on January 6th, each and every state's electoral votes are opened and counted. Mm-hmm. And then that's when it is confirmed that one candidate or another has reached the threshold of 270 electoral votes in order to become president. Does that answer your question?
So obviously that number is just the majority of the 538.
The majority of the 538, exactly.
Got it. Okay, now, makes sense.
Now, what's really interesting, and what a lot of people don't know, that it is possible for both candidates to get 269 electoral votes. And if it were a tie, a lot of people don't realize what would happen, but if it were an actual tie, it would trigger what they would call a contingent election, where the election would get kicked back to the House, and then every state would get just one vote to pick the president.
And so how do they do that?
So they would basically just vote within their legislature who the winner is in that state. But that means, you know, DC gets one vote, Texas gets one vote, California gets one vote, Wyoming gets one vote. And so, so basically it's like 50 votes, I think 50 or 51 votes altogether that get cast if in the event there was an electoral college tie.
Has there ever been a contingent election? Has that ever happened?
There have been. Yeah, there have been. Not in modern day history, but, you know, in the 1800 was a huge, the election of Thomas Jefferson actually was in 1800 was a contingent election where there was a tie between him and his vice president. And the two of them basically... that was before the 12th Amendment was written. And the two of them basically, you know, they took like 36 votes to figure out who would, you know, become president after that. So, yes, it has happened historically and it could potentially happen again. So that's something that people should be aware of.
Wow. How common is it to come into contact with a presidential elector? I've never in my life heard anyone say, oh, this is what I do.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very uncommon. And, you know, that's something in the film. We feature four electors, a Republican, a Democrat, a Green Party elector, and a Kanye West elector. So, yeah. You know, I think that that was the way that I wanted to kind of put a human face on the Electoral College so that, you know, it wouldn't be a boring task learning about the Electoral College. You're actually learning about it through these really interesting people who have decided to be civically engaged by serving as a presidential elector. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, most of us haven't met an elector. And so I thought it would, you know, be really interesting to actually meet, you know, one, and you get to meet four in the film.
Yeah. And how does one become one if they are interested in it? I saw there was like a training program or something.
Yeah. So it really differs between each party and each state. So each state might have rules around, you know, who becomes an elector, but also each party can decide, you know, how electors are chosen. So in Colorado, for example, you know, delegates basically elect the electors, state delegates elect the electors. But then the elector for Kanye West, you know, someone just came to his house, knocked on the door and was like, hey, do you want to be an elector for Kanye West? And all he had to do was sign a form and now he was an elector. So it can widely vary depending on the party and depending on the state, which makes for an even, you know, makes it even more complicated.
Right.
To get your head around.
Right. I guess just succinctly, can you kind of just share what some of the common misconceptions about the Electoral College are and how they affect the public's perception of its role in the election process?
Well, I think a lot of people say that the Electoral College protects small states, protects the interests of small states, but even though it does give it a small mathematical boost in the way the Electoral College math works, the real people who get the boost are the swing states, because candidates, that's who the candidates, the concerns of the swing states are of the utmost priority for candidates, because, you know, their state could basically change the outcome of the election.
Right.
And so you'll see that a big emphasis on the swing states and their policies during campaigns, but also in between elections, there's candidates or incumbent presidents will want to keep those states happy. So come the election, they can hopefully bank on those swing state votes.
Right.
So there's a lot that is emphasized, you know, when you have over 90% of campaign funds spent in swing states, that's a huge imbalance.
Right.
When you think about it. Did I answer your original question?
Yes, no, you did. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I find the title really interesting. One person, one vote, ?
Yeah.
After doing all your research, do you believe that everyone's vote matters? Everyone has a say by being able to vote?
Well,
even though we use this electoral college process.
Yeah, I mean, I think people struggle understanding the electoral college because when they think of a democracy, they think of majority rules. Mm-hmm. But it's a system wherein, you know, a candidate who didn't get the majority of votes can ascend to the presidency. So that's really, really counterintuitive mm-hmm. to how we think about election and democracy, you know, in this country. And so, you know, I think that what Americans need first is to get educated around the Electoral College. Because right now, like you said, most people don't get it. I mean, no matter what level of education you're at, it's such a confusing system. And so I think in order for us to get to a place where we can think about, you know, what the best solution would be, we first have to get educated on it. Why do we have this thing and how it works? And before we can do that, you know, we can't really have a thoughtful discussion around the Electoral College when we don't have this base level of understanding.
Yeah.
And so I think for me and my goal with making this film is to get us as an American electorate educated around how this works and why we have it in the first place. And then, you know, we can have a discussion as to like where we think this should go.
Right. I do think that when you hear what's been going on, especially in the last two elections, it has mm-hmm. seemed odd that people would say, but this person, you know, the majority favors this one person, yet another person mm-hmm. is president. How could this happen? It seems archaic. We signed these documents in the 1700s, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Why does it still happen? So I think this documentary really educates you on the history of why we elect our governing fathers, whatever, mm-hmm. mothers, this way. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see 10 years, 20 years, mm-hmm. decades, you know, hundreds of years late from now, if anything changes based on that. But, you know, it was a fascinating way to understand it, and one that was not so boring. So people that are yeah. interested more in the untold story of the Electoral College, One Person, One Vote, it's out now. It premiered on PBS's Independent Lens. You know, what was your big takeaway from doing the documentary?
My big takeaway is that, you know, when people see this film, they feel they thank me usually in the Q&As, and then they say, you know what, I feel so much smarter now. Mm-hmm. I feel like I can actually talk about the Electoral College than I did 80 minutes ago. I felt really dumb about the Electoral College, and so the fact that you know, knowledge is power.
Yeah.
And I through this film, I'd love to empower us as a people to understand the Electoral College, and then to be able to talk about it and to talk to each other about it, and to figure out, you know, where this needs to go moving forward.
Yeah. Incidentally, I was, you know, we've been having all these hurricanes lately, and the new talk today is that people are very worried about North Carolina, which I believe is a swing state, mm-hmm. and people getting to the polls to vote. I mean, do you have a thought on that now that you're seeing that too?
I mean, I honestly think that we should make it as easy as possible for people to vote. I mean, the more people vote, the more representative our leadership will be of this country. Mm-hmm. I also know that, you know, the last election, we had a pandemic, right? There are a lot of things that I think stood in the way or made it difficult for people to get out to vote, but yet we had record turnouts. So I think that, you know, the people, you know, who are engaged, they will find a way to vote. Obviously in North Carolina, with everything that, you know, that's going on, that does present, you know, some really real challenges. But I think this is when you have to really gather in, as a community, right, to help your neighbor, right? I mean, I can't say, you know, what specifically can be done in North Carolina, but now is a time, I think, that, you know, when we gather and we organize and we support each other, that's when, you know, we become a stronger nation. So, you know, this is, you know, whatever we can do as a nation to help people in North Carolina, we should absolutely, you know, be doing. And so, yeah, again, you know, heart, you know, prayers go out to folks in North Carolina. And again, you know, do what you can to help your neighbors. And so there's a lot of ground game out there and organizations that you can donate to help the folks in North Carolina. So I definitely suggest that, you know, we all do what we can to support, you know, those people that are in need and
right.
of help.
Right. And I think also it's just an important reminder in the last
you know, 3-4 weeks here that people, your vote does matter. Even if you think you're in a state that always goes one way or the other, you never know. And things do change. And I think this is especially a year where people are making some big decisions in their life about who they want to be the president. So I hope people do go out and vote, even if they think their vote doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
It does. Tell people where they can watch your documentary.
Yeah, so they can watch it on the PBS Smart app, and it's also going to be available for a limited time streaming on the PBS YouTube channel, which is very easy to access. So, you know, PBS is a great station. It's got great content that serves the American people, so support it.
Amazing. And if people want to reach out to you and ask you more questions, can you let us know what your Instagram is or a way to reach you?
Yeah. So my personal Instagram is Universal Wide, like worldwide, but Universal Wide. And also One Person, One Vote Doc is the handle for the film.
Amazing. Maximina, thank you so much for joining us. You answered a ton of questions. You made it super simple, and I appreciate you.
Oh, thank you so much, Rachel. It was great to be here.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled M-I-S-S, understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.
Little Sleepies makes getting your kids dressed a lot easier. Their signature bamboo fabric is incredibly soft, breathable, and gentle on sensitive skin. It stretches so kids can move comfortably all day, from playtime to bedtime. Parents love the smart details too, like double zippers and fold-over mittens that make diaper changes and getting dressed faster and easier. And because Little Sleepies are designed to grow with your child, they last longer than typical kids' clothes. Right now, discover the ultra-soft styles families swear by. Visit littlesleepies.com and find your new favorite pajamas today.